Welcome back to the Grandstand. P Money here in Paris, and we got F Knowles in New York. What's going on, my man?
Yo, what a weekend! What a weekend! That's about as fast as I could sum that up.
A weekend full of milestones. Max equaled Senna's 41 wins in what could be described as a really, really good Grand Prix.
I think, with the exception of Friday in FP1, it was could go down as an all-time classic.
It really can. Milestones there. With the amount of races that we have these days, we got about 23 to 24 a year. Back in Senna's time, there was only about 15, 16. Is it fair to compare?
I don't know, man. I feel like it could be. I don't know. I think we've got a lot to get into, though. I think we roll that intro.
A question for all of you, except Romain Grosjean.
To whom it may concern, fuck you.
More ladies in the paddock? Yeah, more paddock access to some women. There's too many dudes.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that, except that he was being a pussy.
Yeah, so Max is 8 years younger than Ayrton when he reached 41 wins, which is ridiculous. Different eras, of course, even if it's hard to compare, even when Michael won his seventh, people were comparing him to Fangio and they were saying, you can't compare, it's hard. And it's true, but we do like milestones and it's a good way to look back at history. And as we'll see later, this race was kind of full of reminders of the great champions we have in F1. But you wanted to start off this weekend by looking at a bit of fuckery by the FIA. I think we never miss an opportunity to bash those guys because they give us so many. So tell us about what happened on Friday, FP1.
Well, it turns out, they got barely 3 or 4 minutes into FP1 on Friday. And I guess there's a closed circuit television system at the Villeneuve circuit, which allows the FIA and the stewards to track what's happening or to follow what's happening on track, which, seems kind of crazy considering that you've got TV cameras all over the place. I don't know why you need like a CCTV, you need your own closed, who knows? I don't know. Somebody can make an argument for it. Anyway, the CCTV system stops working and they have to red flag practice because it's considered unsafe. And we lose FP1. And I guess I just don't, I don't, and this might be a conversation for like mid-season break and rules and our essential series, but I do not understand why the clock still runs when it's red flag during free practice. The fans are there to watch cars. Crofty made a good point. He's like, some people can't afford necessarily to come for the entire race weekend or come during race day. So they'll come to watch the cars at practice. And, you miss out on that. And I think it needs to be reconsidered. I don't get it. They gave 30 minutes. They put 30 minutes on FP2, which I think was a decent compromise, but I think the regulation needs to be looked at because honestly, it makes no sense for the teams who are trying to get up to speed, at a track, especially in FP1, and for the fans. It's just a lose-lose for everyone. And then also the race organizers, why did that CCTV camera go down? And why can't you have a backup involved? It's just, it's like, it doesn't make any sense. It's like, why is there not a, why can't you tap into the global feed that you already have going through your own media company? Like what?
Right. Yeah. It seems like they need to synchronize that a bit better. Our buddy Diatto going to the race just showed up for FP1, and as soon as he got there, it was red flag. So, yeah, we actually know someone who was pretty pissed off at that. But with the weather that was going on Friday and Saturday, we had a lot of rain on Saturday. It feels like the teams did have less time to prepare for the race. We had a wet qualifying and a dry race, and it seems like it might have made racing closer. And some of the drivers were probably caught off guard by the lack of practice because they look rusty out there, especially one driver that we wanted to bring up. And that's unfortunately a Ferrari driver, Carlos Sainz, who kind of looked like a moving chicane there throughout qualifying.
Carlos Sainz, he had a good recovery in the race, obviously, but during Friday and Saturday, my God, dude, he was at a point where I was like, you got to take this guy out of the car and put Giovinazzi in. I mean, yeah.
Ooh, recent Le Mans winner,
but
baby.
He was like super unapologetic about everything he did. I mean, maybe when he binned the car, took the front wing off in FP3. I mean, the fact that Ferrari was able to get that car back on track, and then he impedes Gasly during quali. I wish I'd put him for a gromo, honestly, because he was gromoing everywhere.
Yeah, I think there's grounds for that. Yeah, there's definitely grounds for a gromo there. Gasly was furious because of Sainz, he couldn't make it through Q2. We know the grid is really tight, and Gasly, I think for the second or third race in a row now, is kind of getting the short end of the stick here while Ocon is racking up the points. So rightfully so, furious, and he was calling for a ban. Like a race ban, but that's just the heat of the moment.
I don't know if that's, you know, I don't think that's worth it. But speaking of, you know, Pierre, who had a bunch of points on his super license and, you know, also could have gotten a race ban, I felt that was a little bit ironic coming from him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he might be pointing out, hey, FIA, there's a lot of drivers doing some crazy shit out there. Maybe look at that as well. But yeah, I'll tell you what, I was it's a little embarrassing that qualifying session seeing, because it wasn't just once, it was a few times that Sainz was just like parked on the racing line. But I'll tell you who really impressed me during qualifying, though, in Q2 as the track was drying, because we had rain, then it dried, then rain again. Alex Albon with a ballsy move coming from Williams and putting on the slicks while it was raining. He actually had the quickest time during qualifying.
Alex Albon, we'll get into his race, his weekend a little bit even more in this episode. But yeah, what a crazy, crazy qualifying for him. Incredible result. Also, you have ballsy with a Z on the episode notes here. Ballsy. But yeah, it was ballsy. Dragon Ball Z, if you ask me.
Yeah, that's probably what was stuck in my mind. And Hulk, man. Hulk in P2 in a red flag, another red flag in Q3 when Piastri put it in the wall. Hulk had just put it in P2 in his banker lap. And unfortunately, he was also penalized by the FIA. The FIA was dishing out penalties left and right, I feel, on Friday. And in the race, they got very lenient. He got a penalty for not slowing down enough on a red flag in lap, which is fair, but kind of robbed us of a really, really special front row, which would have been Max, of course, and Hulk.
Here we were years ago saying we'll never see Nico Hulkenberg back on the grid, and he qualified P2.
Yeah, and people were really getting on the hype train saying, oh, if it's raining on Sunday, he might finally get his podium. Wasn't to be. Instead, we had a Max and Fernando front row, just like last year when Alonso put it on P2 with his Alpine. And at the end of the day, if you miss the race, you might just look at the results and say, oh, another Max win. But it was a bit more than that this time. Obviously, he equaled Senna. It was Red Bull's 100th win in F1. Also, Adrian Newey's 200th win in Formula 1. which
that to me is a stat that blows my mind.
Newey has almost won like a fifth of F1's races, like in history. That's how influential he is.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Mind blowing.
Yeah.
The racing was closer, smallest gap of the year, from P1 to P2 with only 9 seconds. And we had a really good old school battle between Alonso and Hamilton for P2.
I loved it. I was a little frustrated. I thought Lewis was giving him a little bit too much respect.
Are we speaking on track?
On track, yeah. I thought Lewis could have put up more of a battle to defend when he got passed by Fernando.
Yeah, so Lewis started in P3 with after all the penalties. So he passed Alonso right off the line, held on, I think, till the first pit stop, and Alonso passed him in the second stint, right? And kept it till the end. It seems like Lewis also might have had some debris throughout the race, but it was good. I think there was one pass each. I feel like the Merc and Aston Martin, who just had its updates, are pretty much on par now. And it seems like we might get more of these battles coming up.
Well, I think when you look at when you look at the points, Mercedes has been slowly, like, they've been creeping up, man. Like, it's not, I mean, they're in second right now in the constructors. I think their points haul, let's look at it. I mean, Mercedes in the last four races, 20 to Aston Martin's 15, 23 to Aston Martin's 18, 33 to 14. Aston did pick up more points in this race, 20 to 15. But, you know, Mercedes has outpaced Aston on points in the last three of the last four races.
Yeah, like, it's a 13-point gap between Merc and Aston Martin only, which is very tight, considering Aston Martin is only racing with one driver. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
they don't have two cars. What other car are you talking about? I have no idea.
We could always find reasons to give Lance some credit, but Alonso is holding down the fort there, and yeah, he needs a little backup there, because if they want to get P2 in the constructors, he's going up against Lewis and George, right? Which, quite frankly, is probably one of the strongest driver lineups on the grid.
Yeah, for sure.
Although George this weekend, I'm not sure. So he's been outpaced by Lewis in the last few races, and seeing his error live, I kind of wanted to call that a gromo. I don't know what you thought about that.
I don't know if I'd go gromo on that one, where he put it in the wall and what ended up retiring his car.
He actually got it back to the pits and raced on, which was pretty impressive for these cars.
It really was. I mean, that back right was completely trashed. But I don't know if I'd go gromo, but it definitely wasn't George's finest moment. And I think Lewis is really racing at a strong level right now. He's feeling more comfortable in the car. And I think George needs to remind himself that, you know, and I think him putting it into the wall is going to be tough for him to swallow, but a little bit of a wake up call to say, I can't keep doing this, right? Especially given how tight it is between them and Aston Martin. You know, George, had he finished the race, would have, I mean, the points haul would have been much higher than what they had this race. He was, you know, they had the car to do it. They really did.
Yeah, for sure. So you don't think George is feeling the pressure here? Because he did start off the year, it looked like he was more comfortable with the car at the beginning of the year, and now it really looks like Lewis is, you know, taken over.
I wonder whose feedback they're really listening to. I'm gonna lean on the side of Lewis here. But no, man, it does feel like he's overdriving a little bit. I will say it feels like he's trying to put in the result, and in doing so, mistakes are made. Carlos definitely had the worst weekend, but George, I would say, didn't have the weekend he needed.
Yeah, at the end of the day, though, Carlos had the mistakes, and
I mean, he did put it.
Practice and qualifying, right?
Right. I mean, ultimately, George put it. You know, it was in P4, right? So, but just on a drive, you know, quali, he did what he needed to do, but on track, it just wasn't there, man.
And you know, he's allowed to have an off weekend, right?
Of course.
These small mistakes at these kind of tracks. Old school tracks that don't have any runoff area, you're going to hit the wall. That's the only thing you can do on this track. So I think Jensen Button was saying that on any other track, 90% of those mistakes would have been, you know, just a runoff. You lose a few seconds, but here you lose a bunch of body work and cause a safety car. So
the margins at this track are so small. In other situations, there's runoff where, you know, you can recover. Here, it's like, nope. Those we know exactly which walls we're talking about. I did like this. We've talked shit about Amazon Web Services, AWS, in the past, but they did have this one piece of analytics where it was measuring the distance each driver was had between their tires and the wall of champions.
Right.
And I think at one point Lando got within 6 millimeters of it.
I think centimeters.
Was it centimeters? Centimeters. Excuse me. Millimeters would have been. Yeah.
Yeah. Millimeters. I think at that point you're pretty much in the wall.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a cool. Yeah. They started doing that thing in Monaco, right? Yeah. That's
usually Lando's measuring things in millimeters, I guess. I don't know. just kidding, Lando. He's definitely got some BDD, man.
Oh, man. Rough. Yeah. No. After such a rough weekend for him.
Yeah. He had a rough one.
You definitely did, man. But man, this podium, we're cutting George a bit of slack here, but can we cut Checo some slack? It's been three races in a row. The gap between him and Max is now 69 points in the championship. I mean, it's over, and at least we wanted a bit of redemption. And P6, he didn't make it into Q3 once again. I love Checo, but I am running out of excuses here.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know what. I mean, at this point, Max has the title wrapped up. We're going to say this now. And I'm about to say something I don't think I've ever said on this podcast, but.
Uh-oh. Drum roll.
I've been very vocal that Max, I'm not a big Max fan on this podcast. But you know, I respect him as a, you know, as a race car driver, but he is starting to put in performances that are silencing his haters, and I am one of them. It's at this point becoming impressive what he's done. I mean, look at his qualifying pace in the rain. He was almost just under 2 seconds faster than Fernando in P2. 2 seconds.
First of all, I love how you're saying he's starting to impress you.
Oh, sorry. All right, starting. No, not
it's
starting.
It's hard to admit. I mean, he's been crushing it for the last couple of years, and I can tell how last year was okay, you've got that wrapped up. This year is really, really nailing it home. But yeah,
he put a foot wrong this weekend. Well, that's something that has to be said. Like, He is really kind of showing Checo, like, you ain't got shit on me, bro, because every driver, I think, other than Max during qualifying, put a foot wrong, and Max just didn't. He was locked in.
Yeah, let me ask you one thing. How many mistakes has Max committed this year? Like, unforced driving errors?
I don't think he's had one.
No, I think he went over the curb right at the end of this race.
Oh, yeah, and he said laughing. He almost did it.
Yeah, he was like
laughing.
He was laughing, and even instead of laughing, he was actually saying "ha ha" in the car, which I find very scary because he's just so in control of everything. And he's like, "Oh, I had a moment, LOL, but I got this." Max is just, and you can't even be mad at it.
No,
and I think he's gotten the respect of everyone on the grid, including Lewis Hamilton. Now, if you look at the podium celebrations,
it did look that way. I think it had a I mean, that podium was great, but it did look that way where Lewis is like, wow, this kid is doing something special right now. And, you know, you just got to tip your hat to him. And, you know, just to go back to the Checo thing, it's like, yeah, I think Checo's got to kind of come to grips with the fact that, you know, he is the second driver at that team. And, you know, he's got to be there to support and make sure that, you know, I mean, the constructors, look at the points that they already have in constructors.
It's nuts.
it's nuts. I mean, they're already in like the mid 300s.
Yeah, and Mercedes, no one else is in the 200s, right?
Yeah, Mercedes is at 167. so, you know, it's really, really impressive. And I think, yeah, that podium was great. The cool down room was watching that was awesome. That was like the conversation between them. It was great. It really was. Except Fernando had this like weird moment where he like,
yeah, what was that about?
Yeah, no, dude, he was like doing some sort of like weird like tongue thing with his mouth open, like practicing for something he might do later. I don't know.
Celebrations. Yeah, some conspiracy theorists will probably call him a reptilian or something.
Yeah, where's Taylor Swift at?
Yeah, that, what a fucking iconic podium. So we have Verstappen, Alonso, Hamilton, and Newey. If you total that up, 376 wins, which is just incredible.
11 world championships.
And you know, we're talking about Checo. Red Bull has never really been a team that has two drivers like Mercedes was back in the Nico and Lewis days. Because if you look at the stats, man, it's 100 wins, right? And Max and Seb Vettel have 79 of those 100 wins, 79%. So you always have the alpha dog, and then you have the supporting cast, right? So if I'm Checo right now, I don't know how I feel about that, because it's been 3 years, and now you really know where you are after 3 years. Like you're not going to bring much more performance to this. So yeah, he might be asking himself questions. I don't think he's going to be under pressure because he's still P2.
Yeah.
But if you look at that podium, it's just another, I mean, that's the elite. And unfortunately, those are the only drivers on the grid that are part of that elite for me, the greats.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're the only ones with titles under their belt on the grid. And I think realistically, interestingly enough, the result too, the 1-2-3, where you've got Max, Fernando, and Lewis in those positions, it was an honest representation of where they're at, you know? It's an honest representation of how this season's gone.
Yeah, and I'm just hoping that Red Bull wasn't sandbagging. Some people are saying, oh, they're trying to hide their true pace.
Yeah, their true pace? Yeah. Oh, come on.
They're trying to, you know, because, you know, when a team is dominating too much, some people say that they try to hide their advantage so that, you know, the FIA doesn't change the rules or whatnot. But it doesn't seem like it. It seems like they were, because point in case, look at Checo. Even though he started 12, he only finished P6, right? If they really had the pace, he would have finished P2. So I don't think so. And I think this is great because Aston Martin just came with a round of updates. Merck just did, and it seems to be working. And also, oh man, this is going to be, it's finally good to talk about Ferrari in a positive way. Ferrari with their updates coming up. And Ferrari had a decent race after horrible qualifying. I mean, let's not forget what they did in qualifying. Ferrari executed a brilliant one-stop race for both drivers that finished P4 and P5. And they were coming back from, I think, P10 and P12 on the grid. So I just want to take a second to appreciate that Ferrari had the right strategy.
I think we said in our preview of the race that Ferrari really needs to just have a clean weekend. I was... When Carlos had his incidents earlier in the weekend, I was like, oh man, this is not looking good for them. But you know, we saw they did what they needed to do in the face of what wasn't looking like a great weekend.
Okay, and
I think Charles in his post-race interview just looked relieved. He's like, thank fucking God we like finished the race. You know, he just like, all right, great. Wow, we almost shocked too. He's like, wow, we didn't mess up.
Right. Okay, so I might have gotten a little too excited because obviously P4 and P5, you know, right. There's nothing to write home about.
But. No, but it's better than what they've been, you know, the DNFs and the, you know, the asinine strategy calls they make.
Yeah, because in qualifying, Charles wanted to go to slicks and the team, you know, overrid them. And there was a bit of I feel like it's interesting because Ferrari drivers tend to speak up on the radio a lot more than they used to. And they challenge the strategy, just like Carlos did during the race and Charles did as well. And there was a bit of a moment there where they were running fairly close to each other. And I think Sainz had a little bit more pace this weekend, to be honest. And Charles's engineer kept referring to Carlos as Sainz. You know, you're usually during with your own team, you refer to them as, you know, as first name. You're on first name basis. He's your teammate. They kept saying Sainz will not attack you, which I found a little weird. They were trying to reassure Leclerc. I don't know for what, but yeah, twice on the radio, they said that this weekend. A little weird. So even though the result was good, there was still a bit of weirdness on the radio and almost a bit of an embarrassing story with Charles coming into Montreal with a Gilles Villeneuve tribute helmet. And the Villeneuve family wasn't too happy about it because he hadn't called them before to ask or tell them that he's going to do that.
Sounded like Jacques Villeneuve's sister kind of overreacted, in my opinion. But then he got a lot of heat and had to make a statement about it. I don't know. It's kind of one of those things where it's like, you've got a driver who drives for Ferrari at a track with your dad's name. Yeah, sure. He should have called or somebody should have said, hey, we're going to do this. Is this okay? I know that there's like, you know, his sister apparently manages the family estate. But at the same time, it's like it's a tribute. It's like you're honoring someone and you should be grateful for that. And at the end of the day, I understand, you know, getting permission is appropriate, but I think it's something that got blown way out of proportion. It's always a touching tribute when somebody, you know, puts a helmet on that honors a driver who's no longer with us. So,
yeah, ridiculous. I thought it was a bit, I thought it was fair. I just, yeah, maybe should have sent a quick message, but also maybe that was the plan the whole time to get a bit of extra press for Villeneuve.
Weird way to do it.
I just wish that Charles could have maybe gotten a podium with that. That would have been cool because that's an awesome tribute. Yeah.
So P4 and P5 obviously weren't enough. So now you're like, well, it should have gotten a podium. But
damn it. Yeah, that's the eternal hope that's coming back already. I guess I'll settle for points. This
that Le Mans hangover is still real.
Oh, man, the hope. Let's look a little bit at the midfield here. As we kind of previewed earlier, Albon, which, by the way, driver of the day, epic defense, bringing in P7. I felt like every time I was looking at the screens, there was a DRS train of about 6-7 cars or like half the grid behind Alex.
There was at one point in the race, and it was like the middle of the race, there was, I think, 6 or 7 second gap between P7 and P17. That's like unheard of in the middle of a race.
All right. So at the end, there is this Alex Albon, 60 seconds between Albon P7 and Tsunoda P14. That's 13 seconds only.
I mean, nuts.
That's wild.
That is wild.
So Albon was the only Williams driver to get the updates, the upgrades for the car this weekend. And he said there was a lot of pressure on him, first of all, not to bin it and to actually put the car through its paces. Logan Sargeant did not have them yet because I think budget. I feel like Albon is just making a name for himself by make these tires last longer and just defend like his life depends on it.
I mean, not only did he get driver of the day, right? He was definitely my driver of the day for sure. And you don't really hear Albon, like you don't really hear him get too excited. You know, he's a pretty level-headed dude and you know, keeps his calm and, you know, kind of always has that like goofy little, you know, like like shoulder shrug kind of thing that he does. You know, and is generally regarded as one of the nicest dudes in the paddock, but he went off in his post race or in his cross the finish line radio. I mean, he was, you would have thought he won the race.
Yeah. I mean, I think he mentioned it. He said with Aston Martin making that huge step this year, it's kind of hard to get a top eight now, because you kind of figure that those four teams get the top eight. So with Russell DNFing, that's pretty much like winning the race for him. I was really happy for him. I think that podium celebration, the podium with, you know, the three world champions on it, and Albon getting driver of the day, it's a very wholesome weekend for F1 here. And a lot of drivers tried to pass him. I think Ocon was there. Russell couldn't even pass him. So that Williams has got a very, very good top speed. So I bet they're waiting for Monza try to put in another performance.
On the other side, Sargeant DNF. So
what do we think of that?
Well, that sounds like it wasn't his fault.
No. And you know, he didn't get the upgrades either. So it's hard to compare both of those, and he won't get the upgrades next round in Austria. He'll get them in Silverstone.
I mean, and that was the interesting thing, is seeing the fact that he didn't get the updates. You know, it's almost like Williams were testing to see what's really working and what isn't. And clearly, whatever they brought to the table is making a difference. Mm-hmm. But I also think Alex drove really brilliantly this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for Logan to keep up with Alex in the next few races. Another points scoring performance from Ocon, who's racking up the points the last few races. I don't have much to say, except that his rear wing was wobbling like crazy.
That was nuts. How he wasn't forced to come in blows my mind.
Yeah, the black and orange flag, usually for when you have, you know, P's kind of dangling off. I think was it Norris who was trying to...
Yeah, Lando was behind him, and he's like, this is dangerous. I mean, there was one point where I thought it was just going to fly right off and go straight into Lando's car.
Yeah, and in the end of the day, it passed scrutineering, so it's perfectly fair and perfectly legal. So, yeah, I guess that works. Alpine scoring points. I guess that we got a bit too excited by thinking Alpine would be up there with Ferrari. I think there is going to be a bit of a gap between the top four and the rest of the field. Mm-hmm. But good points for Alpine, and good points for Valtteri Bottas, who we mentioned him on last episode, that he needed a result, and he got it. He got P10, although that could have been P9, because Lance Stroll passed him on the line by 0.03 of a second, which is pretty wild. I don't know if you caught that.
I didn't, actually.
Yeah.
Valtteri too, you know, like had a whole range of lumberjack gear that he brought. That was in, like, you know, a blue lumberjack, which was interesting.
Yeah.
Did a special helmet that had the groundhog, who made many the groundhogs were making appearances left and right.
They were.
let's not forget to shout out the groundhogs. A lot of wildlife. Max, I think I hit a bird. And then the famous groundhogs that was on his helmet. Valtteri, I think it's so interesting with him, because this season he just seems like so at ease, and like really see his personality coming out, I think, a lot more. And it's almost taken away from the fact that Alfa Romeo has just kind of been
meh.
You know, not necessarily, you know, they're not the worst team, but they're not, you know, they're like back of the midfield.
When he saw the calendar, he definitely marked Canada as a huge PR move for VB77, because they were PR wise, him and his girl were on it this weekend with all that.
Oh yeah. Merch. Yeah. They truly were. I think they also had had an experience that they had like curated this weekend. One of those like packages. I think we had discussed it at some point, but like an all inclusive, you know, like paddock pass thing where you get to like hang out with Valtteri. And
oh man, that'd be a good way to spend your weekend.
It would be, actually.
Unfortunately, McLaren though continues their points drought in Canada. You know, the last time they scored points in Canada was Jenson Button 2014.
Has it been that long?
It's been 9 years, man.
Wow. What is going on there?
It's been 9 years, and Norris would have finished in the points if it weren't for a 5-second penalty for unsportsmanlike conduct. That's how the FIA worded that. And okay, so I think what everyone's confused about is that what he did was he backed up when there was a safety car. He backed up in order to double stack, giving his team time to first pit Piastri, his teammate, and then himself. It's generally not allowed and usually get a penalty, but it's not unsportsmanlike. It's just driving intentionally slower under a safety car. So I feel like no one's really going against the penalty, but it's the way they worded it is just weird.
What do you mean the way they worded it? I think the whole thing is bullshit. I don't understand how, what I don't understand about that penalty and Carlos in qualifying, how Carlos didn't get a penalty blows my mind.
Carlos did get a penalty.
He did.
Yeah, he got a penalty. Right. And this, yeah. The one Norris got, to be clear, is a known penalty. Lewis did it, I think, a few years ago under a safety car. I think it was in Baku. And he got a penalty as well because that's just the rule. You're not allowed to drive slower because you're slowing down the field and it could be unsafe. But unsportsmanlike conduct, I just don't get it. And that's why everyone is, there was even talk in the paddock that Lando is going to sue the FIA for defamation, or he could, there's grounds for it. Because, you know, if you look at Lando, we said, you know, Alex is one of the nicest guys on the grid and Lando's right up with him, I feel. And in no way has he ever done anything unsportsmanlike. So yeah, just another bit of an FIA blunder this weekend.
Yeah. All right. If in that sense, unsportsmanlike, I mean, come on. Like you know what's unsportsmanlike? Going down to a paddock and punching someone, which by the way, this weekend, Roman Grosjean had an absolutely piss poor weekend. Have to bring up Grosjean, the Gromo. Binned it 3 times, spun out of the race. Got called out by Will Power for impeding his qualifying session and was told, he basically said, Roman Grosjean deserves to get punched in the face.
He kind of did, though, this weekend.
He really did deserve it on all fronts. I mean, he did, like, at least a slap.
Oh, man.
Anyway. Yeah. But
Will Power really got impeded all around, though, I felt. Like, he even crashed into... Yeah, wasn't qualifying, they crashed into someone as well. I mean,
it wasn't good.
Not his weekend.
No, it wasn't. But to go back to F1, I mean, yeah, unsportsmanlike conduct. They need to change that. He broke a rule. Like, that's what it is.
Right, right.
You know, like, not unsportsmanlike.
Just to restore Lando's good name. Yeah. Change the wording of it.
Don't talk down on my name.
So there was no Gromo this race, but I feel like De Vries and K-Mag gave us a funny incident there when De Vries was diving down the inside, I think at turn 3, and couldn't break in time. And they both had to take that escape route and back up on track pretty much. And anytime you see a car, you know, reversing during a race is a little silly. It just looks silly to see an F1 car going backwards, but no Gromo, but that might have been the closest thing.
Dude, De Vries, I don't know, man. We both put De Vries for a Gromo, and I don't know. It's pretty damn close, that one.
Yep, he finished last. He almost gave us that Gromo against Magnussen. And Magnussen was pretty cool about it. He's like, you know what? I'm a hard racer. I would have probably gone for it as well. So no harm, no foul. It looked pretty silly out there. But I'll tell you what, Haas, after a really good qualifying, was nowhere during the race either, man. So that was disappointing.
Yeah, it was really odd how Haas just kind of just disappeared during that race. Made no sense.
Yeah, and Hulk just has like incredible pace in qualifying this year, which I don't understand given he's been out of F1 for 4 years. So yeah, not rusty there. But if we look at the F1 standings real quick, it will not come as a surprise that Max is totally dominating this year. And as you said, we can probably just give him the trophy right now, call it a day. He's 69 points ahead of Checo, And we have, who do we got? We have in third, we have Fernando Alonso, nice. who still thinks he can get Checo for P2, which is that would be huge. And Lewis in P4. And as you said, Red Bull still dominating that constructors, quite with a huge gap in front of Mercedes and Aston Martin. And now time for our championship, which there's a bit of movement.
You made a little bit of a comeback.
Yeah, I think we both got the very surprising pole and win for Max Verstappen. And I'll be honest with you, I was really rooting for Alonso at the end of that race when he was battling with Lewis. Just because of the points, man. So I scored points for P2 and P3. And your lead has gone down to 32 points. You're at 140 to 108.
You know, you needed a strong weekend. So good for you. You know, good for you.
Baby steps. You know,
one by one.
I'll claw my way back, just like Ferrari this year. You know.
Okay.
Yeah. Good luck. Oh man. All right. So we do not have a race this weekend. A little bit of a breather, and we will be going to Austria in two weeks.
The Red Bull Ring. Always a good time there, actually. The races there tend to be fun.
Yeah, it's one of those short tracks too. I think it's like a minute and 3 seconds. It looks like a go-karting track. And it's in the middle of amazing scenery in Austria. And if you're not a Red Bull fan, you're not going to like this race weekend, because Red Bull's going to be all over that. And it's going to be all about Max and Red Bull. Make sure to give us a follow at the Grandstand F1 on Instagram and Twitter. And give us a review wherever you listen to your podcast. We'll be back next week with the Austria preview. So from us, the Grandstand, see you next week.